Resurrected Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast, on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Yes, The Fabian Freeway, which is a book from Rosel Martin, The High Road to Socialism in the USA. Ladies and gentlemen, what we are looking at right now is the day and age of the technocrat rising. That some people call it the deep state, some people call it many other things, but we were talking about the Fabian socialists, and one of the most famous Fabian socialists that I'm sure that your kids is probably required reading because he's such a wonderful literary genius and playwright.
They were all wonderful children's authors, like Roald Dahl, you know?
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. So listen to George Bernard Shaw in his own words about justifying your existence. Roll that clip.
You must all know half a dozen people at least who are no use in this world, who are more trouble than they are worth. Just put them there and say, sir or madam, now will you be kind enough to justify your existence? If you can't justify your existence, if you're not pulling your weight in the social boat, if you're not producing as much as you consume, or perhaps a little more, then clearly we cannot use the big organization of our society for the purpose of keeping you alive, because your life does not benefit us, and it can't be of very much use to yourself.
Okay, well, that should tell you something. You know, if your life has become to the point where you can't produce or produce a little bit more than what you consume, then you are of no use to us. And, you know, you can look at this as, you know, as a chilling effect of, say, let's look at how medicine treated my mother after Obama got into office, right? She got cancer. And she had a couple other problems. And basically, she was in a medically induced coma. And she had really beaten back the cancer. But she had had a side effect, she'd gotten very sick to the effects of the chemotherapy. And they said, well, you know, she's just so, at this point, she's just so old and so tired that it would be really not beneficial to continue. To continue what? And then they,
right.
Because my stepfather is so brainwashed by, you know, an order follower himself, they basically, you know, euthanized her to death with morphine. And that was not her will. That was not her will. But she could not produce or, you know, this is the same concept. These are these technocrats, these doctors, they think that, and it's in medicine, it's in pharma, it's in, oh my God, Rockefeller medicine paved the way for this.
Yep. James Corbett has done, you know, if you go to CorbettReport.com/big oil, he has a section on eugenics, the father, you know, Francis Galton. Mm-hmm. And speaking of Francis Galton, I mean, even bad guys admit it. Francis Fukuyama wrote, our posthuman, think about this title, folks, our posthuman future. What? Our posthuman future, consequences of the biotechnology revolution. And I was just looking at, you know, the China CRISPR baby AIDS, blah, blah, blah controversy. This stuff, our posthuman future, consequences of the biotechnology revolution, that was published in 2002, folks.
Yeah.
This is not a new issue. And it was a way old discussion then. So James Corbett, if you haven't seen How and Why Big Oil Conquered the World, CorbettReport.com/big oil. And so, you know, the point about Francis Fukuyama, he has a section on Francis Galton, Darwin's cousin, who applauded the Origin of Species. And by the way, what is the full title that never gets discussed? You hear Origin of Species, the Origin of Species. What's a full title? And even the last part gets clipped off, On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection. And what? Or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Who decides who the favored races are?
Right?
So Galton applauded his cousin Darwin when Origin of Species was published, and he got an early copy. He wrote Darwin back a letter, and he said, congratulations. I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said, congratulations, You have freedom. This is the guy who coined the term eugenics. Francis Galton writes Darwin and says, you, Darwin, have freed us from the theological argument that all life is precious, indeed priceless, you know, mankind. And now we can just argue that some people are biologically inferior and therefore they should die. Yeah. And so you have that coming through the turn of the 20th century, like you said, the Rockefeller family in particular, you know, funding things like the Tuskegee experiments. And
oh my God,
For people who don't know, you know, the forced sterilization, they call it involuntary sterilization. But if you don't know, I mean, if you don't know the real awful history of this.
Well, you know just to come to mind real quick before I forget it, Really Graceful, mm-hmm. the YouTube channel, Really Graceful.
Yeah.
She just put out a piece. Oh my goodness. On the medical experiments, the government experiments of people against their will. And she does such wonderful, wonderful productions. And so thoroughly researched. I have to give her kudos, but anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. No, absolutely. And the title of that video we should mention too, because she's doing a masterful job. That one, whoops. Yeah.
I didn't have the title.
It's titled Human Experiments You'll Never Believe Happened, United States Germ Warfare, pre-1970.
Yes.
And so she's talking about this stuff, but she's also saying, hey, you know, all this spraying that, you know, like Brennan talked about at the Council on Foreign Relations meeting when he said, you know, stratospheric aerosol injection, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's a good idea. And then CNN's running a piece last week about how cool it would be, or this week actually, if, you know, Brennan said it would cost $10 billion to spray the whole Earth, but we could probably do it for like $2.5 to $3.5 billion a year. Wouldn't that be great? So she's saying, wait a second, that stuff was going on, and Nixon actually nixed the program of spraying. There was biological experimentation in places like San Francisco and other places.
Yeah, they sprayed the whole coastline there of San Francisco.
Huge, horrible.
To nobody's knowledge. They just
– yeah,
and this has been going on. So, you know, what that brings up for a moment, for those of you that are not may not be familiar with that. I think, you know what, how long is that clip that she, that video that she just put out? Because we may just roll that on that
13 minutes.
I think we'll
13
think
minutes, but you know what? I would say you could probably skip forward to about 10, play the last 3 minutes or so even. And there's a ton of great stuff.
Maybe what we'll do is we'll just roll it at the end of this show. And because there's a couple things in the beginning too that I want people to hear. And what I'm getting at with this, the reason I want people to hear this on the radio, because there are some folks up really way up there that don't do the YouTube thing, that I'd like to hear this. But the fact of the matter is that we have government that conducted these experiments without the public's knowledge. And that's beyond lying. That's actually assaulting them, right? This is the same government that we entrust to schedule narcotics, like kratom, for instance. Okay, kratom, which is a non-dangerous substance that people used instead of using opioids, while the government is screaming opioid crisis, and while Big Pharma is making a ton of money off of synthetic opioids and synthetic painkillers and all these other nerve blockers and everything else. The same government that experiments on you, you're going to trust to tell you that you can or can't take a plant. It's insane. Yeah. It's insane. Yeah. To me, that the definition of insanity, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. And to continue on that thought of insanity, you know, people that have been encouraged to not remember history, it's incredible how fragile the link is, you know. Orwell wrote in 1984, controls the present, who controls the present, controls the past, who controls the past, controls the future. You can reshape, you know, by reshaping or occluding history and the past, mm-hmm. you can reshape the future. Santayana was the one who gave us that quote that people, I think, really sort of quote out of context. You know, Santayana in The Life of Reason wrote that, you know, he was the one who wrote, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." But it was in context. And the context was this: progress, far, and, you know, people run around, "Oh, we're progressives." Well, you need to understand what Hillary Clinton meant when she said in the 2007 CNN YouTube debates that she considers herself a modern progressive, like the early 20th century American progressives. Read R.J. Pistrito's Birth of the Administrative State, Where It Came From and What It Means for Limited Government over at Heritage Foundation. That's an interesting primer on that. Anyway, Santayana wrote, "Progress, far from consisting in change, depends on retentiveness."
Yes.
Where are our retentiveness awards? When change is absolute, now think about the millennials and the planned obsolescence of things, folks, and the way that, you know, is it me or do we see a new ad for a new phone? Oh, it's the new leak for the new phone that comes out like every week. Yeah. Change is absolute. So Santayana wrote, "When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve and no direction is set for possible improvement. No wonder these poor kids are sitting on their parents, you know, on a couch in their parents' basement. What hope? Yeah. What direction for possible improvement?" And he wrote, when experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual.
And those look cannot, at what we're having, this infantile mindset, yeah?
Yeah. And yeah, more and more. Those we who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So if you think about it, it's a fragile, we think we're so strong in America, but for those of us who remember, I've heard listeners on the Road Warrior radio broadcast call in and say, "Chris, I remember going to the farmer's market in Los Angeles. Before there was Dodger Stadium, there was the farmer's market there in that spot. And people used to can things, families, friends, neighborhoods used to get together and can things together. And it was not uncommon for people to, you know, go out into the woods, even close to the city, and come home with things, you know, whether alive or, you know, animal, plant.
Now you need a permit to do that. And a lot of things you can't touch.
Right. And, you know, the UN biodiversity nonsense from 1992 and Maurice Strong's rewilding nonsense, you know. Yep. But if we don't remember the past, this is the fragility. This is the how delicate it is. We're a generation away from forgetting all that stuff. It could be lost forever, so to speak.
Well, these are also as a direct result of the effects of ideological subversion. You know, I'd sent to you some information on, you know, I have a little bit of skeptical mixed emotions when it comes to Yuri Bresmanov, who was the defector from the Soviet Union. He did illustrate how, and I'm noticing this, how we have been ideologically, for the most part, ideologically subverted. But he came along at a time where that subversion had gone so far that his revelation of that, it really, I would have liked for people to hear, see that and wake up from it. But, you know, you play that for a kid today and they just don't get it. They don't get it.
Beware the Pied Piper.
Right. Well, the one thing that he fell back to is people have to get out and vote. And again, here's the trouble. People don't need to get out and vote. People need to get out there and learn. And learn.
Right. And start, when you hear someone say get out and vote, start, go read Lysander Spooner and start with No Treason, number 6, The Constitution of No Authority. Yep. Start there. I mean, maybe that's a bold statement, but
no.
You know, While we're on that subject, can I mention an excerpt real fast?
Sure, you can mention whatever you want, brother. You're
Xander Spooner, No Treason. It was 3 essays, basically. Number 1, number 2, and number 6. Number 6 was titled "The Constitution of No Authority." First two published in 1867. Number 6 published in 1870. And he would, you know, this is sort of jumping in the middle of much broader context and a much broader point, but he wrote, "A man is nonetheless a slave because he is allowed to choose a new master once in a term of years. Neither are a people any the less slaves because permitted periodically to choose new masters. What makes them slaves is the fact that they now are, and are always hereafter to be in the hands of men whose power over them is and always is to be absolute and irresponsible. The right of absolute and irresponsible dominion is the right of property. And the right of property is the right of absolute irresponsible dominion. The two are identical. And Lysander Spooner was a bright legal mind, by the way. The two are identical, the one necessarily implying the other. Neither can exist without the other. If, therefore, Congress have the absolute and irresponsible lawmaking power, which the Constitution, according to their interpretation of it, gives them, it can only be because they own us as property. If they own us as property, they are our masters, and their will is our law. If they do not own us as property, they are not our masters, and their will as such is of no authority over us. But these men who claim and exercise this absolute and irresponsible dominion over us dare not be consistent and claim either to be our masters or to own us as property. They say they are only our servants, agents, attorneys, and representatives. But this declaration involves an absurdity, a contradiction. No man can be my servant, agent, attorney, or representative and be at the same time uncontrollable by me and irresponsible to me for his acts. It is of no importance that I appointed him and put all power in his hands. If I made him uncontrollable by me and irresponsible to me, he is no longer my servant, agent, attorney, or representative. If I gave him absolute or irresponsible power over my property, I gave him the property. If I gave him absolute irresponsible power over myself, I made him my master and gave myself to him as a slave. And it is of no importance whether I called him master or servant, agent or owner. The only question is, what power did I put in his hands? Was it an absolute and irresponsible one or a limited and responsible one? And again, that's just, you know, not even scratching the tip of the iceberg there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, I mean, what do you think? I mean, that's, you know, that's good stuff.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
I mean, that's telling it like it is. And that was 1870. So,
oh, Lord, have mercy.
So the other thing, getting back to the eugenics movement, people that aren't familiar with this, Edwin Black wrote a brilliant book titled War Against the Weak. And, you know, that's something that everyone should definitely probably look into. War Against the Weak, eugenics, and America's campaign to create a master race. Master race? Gosh, yep. That sounds familiar.
Yes.
So he talks about, you know, basically he says it began on Long Island and ended at Auschwitz. Actually, it didn't end at Auschwitz because, you know, we brought it back here. So it started at Long Island. It migrated to places like Auschwitz. Japan had Unit 731. If you're not familiar with Unit 731, make sure you don't look it up during lunchtime, if you know what I mean. It's horrific, the things that men do to other men or beast or anything. So War Against the Weak is the story of American eugenics that spread throughout the world and then was reimported after World War II. Yay!
Yeah,
and again,
right?
French Yama does a pretty honest, unvarnished job of saying the deal. To the Pied Piper issue, real quick as a parenthetical aside, it's interesting how, you know, like John Stormer's None Dare Call It Treason, I mentioned earlier, there are these books, Larkin, Texas, who calls in, to the Road Warrior radio broadcast sometimes, fortunately, every once in a while.
I love Lark.
He gives me a hard time for mentioning Hayek's Road to Serfdom, but, you know, he says, you know, Chris, what about the Pilgrim Society and so on and so on? And I agree, but the bad guys who create the problems are naturally better at detailing the problem because they created it. So, you know, when I read Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed, he tells it so perfectly. The thing you got to watch out for with the Pied Pipers is when they say, like you said, with Yuri Bezmenov, hey, here's the solution. Follow me. You know, yes. I mean, it's that kind of thing. You know, here's the solution. This is the problem. Man, that's brilliant. And it logically follows. He describes the problem so well, then he must have, you know, his answer must be right too. But that's how they get you, as they say.
Yes.
So you got to be mindful of that stuff when you read this stuff. And for those who don't, you know, for those who don't know, Kool-Aid comes in a variety of flavors.
It sure does. Sure does. And you know, it's amazing to me how people can be so so easily tricked. And you know, we a lot of people today, a lot of my friends who I hear them speaking out against certain ideologies, like, and I know we keep going back to this, like socialism. Oh, those bunch of those Antifa commies. Well, I'm sorry, but when I sit back and I look at these, say, Charlottesville or a couple of these other rallies that have happened, and I find out that there were literally people in Russia who scheduled some of these events, both sides of the events, right, to bring on conflict. But when I sit back and I actually look at the players involved, the Americans on the ground that are doing this, I'm sitting back and I'm looking at two groups of different flavored leftists fighting right. each other. They're not. They're,
well, absolutely. And speaking of, again, you know, the Pied Piper, you know, those are events that guys like Richard Spencer show up. And
yeah,
I think it's, you know, the best distillation of Marxism that I've ever heard. Marx was brilliant at infiltrating workers' groups and getting them to endearing himself to the workers' group and basically turning them against one another and themselves, destroying them from within. That's what Marxism is, really. You know, workers of the world, unite and let us destroy ourselves, or let us make sure that, you know, again, Hayek details the problem well. First, there's the Marxist Revolution. Then socialism is the termination of the revolution along hierarchical lines, strong dictatorial authority, and a coercive spiritual power. That's what is always intended. So 10 years ago on the presidential campaign trail, Mike Huckabee gave an interesting foreign policy speech during which he said to create havoc in the world. This reminds me of the Richard Spencers and all these guys running around talking to people. And, you know, you see immediately afterwards, there's some kind of synthetic nonsense event. So Huckabee said to create havoc in the world. And again, bad guys know how to, you know, it's bad guy speak. To create havoc in the world, you need educated people to provide the intellectual underpinnings and poor, desperate people to provide the manpower. And to that, again, John Stormer reminds us that communism is not an ideology of the people, of the common man. It's always the upper class intellectuals that it stems from. What's her name? Ralph Epperson's The Unseen Hand, he reminds us that Bella Dodd, the communist organizer, observed herself. She was a communist, ardent yes. communist, but she observed in their meetings that some of their folks would, when there was an important decision, some people, you know, one or two, three figures, one of them would leave, go across the street, talk to international capitalists, come back and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Anyway, so Huckabee said, to create havoc in the world, you need educated people to provide the intellectual underpinnings and poor, desperate people to provide the manpower. Before the Russian Revolution, the rural peasants who formed the overwhelming bulk of the population weren't sitting around reading Karl Marx. They were illiterate. Today, I would say America is functionally illiterate. Huckabee said, it took a small number of intellectuals to provide the theory and then rally oppressed peasants behind them. Which reminds me of Obama. Yes, we can. Hope and change. And yes. All those people running through Central Park. Ah! All those overweight, you know, just that horrible image. So it took a small number of intellectuals to provide the theory and then rally oppressed peasants behind them. And he said the ruling class is the spark, but the underclass is the fuel. The strong middle class is the firewall. And what did Obama do to the firewall? The middle class. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh my God! You know, it's like a bad movie, man. You know,
yeah.
Some aspects I'm glad that my parents aren't here to have to see where this is going to go from here. Because I tell you
crazy.
This is not what I was raised to accept for certain.
George Bernard Shaw. And socialism, the Constitution, socialists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's
go ahead.
No, I we should at some point roll his clip on the Constitution. I have that queued up too.
Well, yeah, as a primer, again, you know, the Fabian Socialists, the Fabian Society, for those who don't know, their mascot early on was a wolf. In a sheep suit.
Yes.
Wolf, half zipped up in a sheep suit. Who does that? Who masquerades as wolves in sheep's clothing? Jesus talked about that in Matthew chapter 7 and 10.
You know, there was a quick article put out by Jay Bren. It's a really – this is why I love these articles. It's short. It's sweet to the point. It mentions Hillary. It mentions Obama. It mentions Trump. Ties it all in together. For people that want a short read, I'm publishing it right now at rtrtruthmedia.com. You can see the wolf in sheep's clothing is the photograph, if people aren't familiar with it. And this was actually, George Bernard Shaw designed that emblem.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so who does that? Who thinks like that? And people say, oh, well, you know, I mean, it's a colloquialism. Don't get too really, then why can you go on YouTube right now and find about 17, at least I can find 17 right now, clips of politicians saying, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. What do you suppose they mean, folks? And you also get Katy Perry's Bon Appetit, and you can read Bertrand Russell's impact of, you know, Bertrand Russell, another generational old school bad guy, The Impact of Science on Society, published in 1952. Basically, it should have been called The Impact of Technocracy on Society, but where he wrote on page, 52? Gradually, by selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and ruled will increase until they become almost different species. A revolt of the plebes would become as unthinkable as an organized insurrection of sheep against the practice of eating mutton. And parenthetically, he adds, the Aztecs kept a domesticated alien tribe for purposes of cannibalism. Their regime was totalitarian. I wonder if they mean what they're saying, and they're saying what they mean. I wonder. You know, and speaking of Edwin Black, before I forget, if anyone's interested, go listen to the interview Glenn Beck did of Edwin Black. That was actually a pretty good Glenn Beck segment.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, good. Oh, and Mike, if you're there, can you roll that short clip on the Constitution and George Bernard Shaw, the famous Fabian socialist?
It's no good in this country putting questions of national importance to me. I've been here before. I told you what to do, and you haven't done it. And you're up to your neck in trouble in consequence. I told you in New York, I put it to you very carefully and exactly. I told you that what you had to do in this country was to abolish your constitution, which was preventing you from doing anything.
Abolish the constitution. That's what he said. That's what his answer was, because it just prevents you from doing. No, it prevents the government. It's a
prevents. Right. Thomas Jefferson's draft of the Kentucky Resolutions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, bind them down, those whom we are obliged to trust with power, bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. That's who and what.
Oh, folks, we'll be back after a few words from our sponsors, Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Media.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hands seem to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Gentlemen, Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Media with Chris Hinckley, the Road Warrior. I'm your host, Tom Lacavera-Stewart. And folks, if you would, go to rtrtruthmedia.blogspot.com and smash on that PayPal button, the donate up on the upper right-hand spot of the site. I am working on the site a little bit, so you're going to find a couple things that used to be there that are not, like some content that I know people have frequent. I'll have it back on there momentarily. We're just making some minor adjustments, but rtrtruthmedia.blogspot.com. You can also get to it through rtrtruthmedia.com and click on that PayPal button. We could really use the support. YouTube channel is finally growing again, so you guys can go and see us on YouTube at RTR Truth Media on YouTube. also BitChute. And what I recommend that people do, it's easier to find it, is if you go to your search browser and type in RTR Truth Media, BitChute, it will give you the link a lot easier than sometimes finding it on the BitChute site. And I'd appreciate if people go to BitChute and subscribe and start using BitChute rather than Google and YouTube. We need to start using the things that we have. Anyway, we have I believe we have a caller on the line. Rhonda in Missouri. Rhonda, are you on?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Hi, Chris. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hi.
Not too bad, all things considered. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. I have a question for you guys. Okay, I really... politics just isn't my thing. sorry. But look, you guys... here's where I'm at. You guys are both very intelligent, right? And
well, thank you.
Let's just say, yeah, you're welcome, Tom. Hey, let's just say that all of the, and I'll lay out a scenario here, but let's just say that all of the intelligent people stayed home when it was voting time. Do you know what we would end up with? Do you
yes.
know what we would end up with?
I could answer
okay.
that. Yeah, the same thing that we have.
No.
No, I disagree, but go ahead.
I think that would be a wonderful experiment, and I've advocated that for years. Two things that I would do, and I usually do every election. Don't go use the electronic machine because, right. You know, we've known for,
you mean
what,
the size
15
of the
years?
Paper ballot. Right.
Well, yeah,
so if you have
to
a
your
choice.
Point.
Between the paper. Okay.
Well, Clint Curtis told us, you know, before Congress that he was hired by Tom Feeney to rig the black boxes. And the only way that anyone would know is if they poured over the source code or they had a paper ballot they could compare. And so there's your clue. If you're going to go to the polls, make sure you have a paper receipt. But don't go to the polls. Use an absentee ballot. And I think because of primarily the way that the national election pool works, telling people who they voted for before they go to the polls, that we shouldn't go 1 year. It would be wonderful one election cycle if everyone would just business as usual, and we all secretly huddled and said, okay, let's not go. And then we watched the ticker roll on the local media saying, you know, all of these exit polls, and this is who, you know, this is who's ahead. And then, you know, turns out we all said we didn't vote, and the second best thing would be that we all show up at these ridiculous, you know, protracted, contested vote counts with a bunch of copies of absentee ballots and said, now, wait a second, let's compare notes here.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And
well, I heard
and,
on micro.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, on Mike Rivero's show, he said that's how they steal elections is through the absentee ballot with dead people, et cetera, et cetera. But go ahead, Tom. What were you going to say?
Well, that was one of many ways. And you know, in thinking of your question of all the intelligent people stay back and didn't vote, you know, if you really look at the system that we have right now, we literally have the two different flavors of essentially what is the same socialism. So we're not really given, and if you can tell me, if people can actually really tell me that Hillary Clinton and even Donald Trump, that these are the two most honorable, righteous people that should be, you know, in the position that they're in out of all of the people that are in America. I mean, look at Ron Paul. Ron, we had our chance. We had a brief chance.
Yeah, I voted for Ron Paul. Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes. You know, if a Ron Paul came along and was taught, then morally I could get past my aversion to the democracy that we're in. I would take a chance. I would roll the dice. I would throw my hat into the ring and I would go for it. If somebody like him or you know, but I don't know. I just I don't know.
Do you know why he got out of? I heard that he kind of laid down like a dog, if you will.
Yep.
When a good friend of his was murdered.
It was, well, yeah, are we talking about Kent Snyder, who was his campaign chair at the time? Yeah. It was an interesting situation because you're talking about the 2008 election cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in the 2008 election cycle, Ron Paul said, coming out of 2007, going into 2008, if he had support and funds, he would continue on. And he got a massive influx of campaign funding and obviously had overwhelming support if you base it only on the massive influx of, you know, $20 campaign contributions. So anyway, they went into 2008, very excited. And then, yeah, Kent Snyder, a young, healthy, I think he was early 40s, just fell over and died. And then
and
Ron
that's
Paul's,
what they do.
Yep.
And then Ron Paul's wife, that was, I think, June or July. And then Ron Paul's wife, Carol, got sick unexpectedly and suddenly. And then he was like, yeah, no, I think I'm done now.
Yep.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. And this
so
is why.
One I mean, best hope.
I'm kind of shot on voting.
Well, listen, okay, let's just say, well, you guys are both intelligent, and I like to think I am too. But you know what pushes my buttons?
What's that?
Is when I see somebody on TV that I'm in Missouri and they say, Claire McCaskill, why did you vote for Claire McCaskill? I just cringe every time because I can't stand that woman. And I tried to reach out to her one time and she ignored me, but I knew what her number was, if you know what I'm saying. Anyway, she said because she was against the Second Amendment. So I don't have a gun. I did take a concealed carry class. I never went through with it. I can't kill anybody. If I'm serious, I can't take a life. I hope somebody, some good man would be around me to do it for me. But either way.
You know what? I think you'd be amazed at what you can do when your life is actually really literally in jeopardy. My mom wasn't a killer either. But she had that 45 in her hand one night when some people came to the door, and she had a different look in her eye. I called it the Clint Eastwood look.
Well, you know what? That's the thing, isn't it? When you don't know until you're in the situation. So go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. But when it comes to the Second Amendment, I'm going to say something very controversial, and and for the audience, you know, hold on and don't flip out when I say this. I don't give a damn about people that want to remove the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment doesn't give us anything.
Absolutely not.
Not a thing. All it was it identified a pre-existing right that existed prior than the government ever existed.
It's an inherent implied right. It's not stated.
Yeah.
The right of the people. There you go. What right?
Yeah, there is nothing in the Second Amendment that gives us a damn thing. All it is supposed to do is prevent
it's
government
enumerated.
And in the democracy, they can do whatever they want. So if whether they do that to this corporate constitution, well, it would be a shame because it does exist as an inspirational slogan that at least people who are half lit in the brain can understand shall not be infringed. So it's kind of given them some moxie to stand.
And
right?
The merit to your point, one of the merits to your point is, you know, for example, in the Federalist Papers, one of the arguments of a Bill of Rights was that if we write them down, people are going to go, oh, well, these are the only ones. Mm-hmm. But what does the Ninth Amendment say? The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people.
Yes. Yes. So,
which is why they wrote that.
Yes.
By the way, you know, that's not. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say real quick, I also heard somewhere that maybe it was on your show, Tom, that the 13th Amendment says lawyers should not be in government. But that's a side note, if you will.
Well,
but hey,
that's kind of sort of accurate. When people say that, I want to clarify. I call it the anti-shyster amendment, not so much the anti-lawyer amendment, but what it would have prevented, foreign money, corporate money in politics. It would have prevented titles of nobility, which means essentially, all right, you look at the Bar Association, right? Now, you could say a monarch can grant a title of nobility, but if you actually look at the definitions of the words, they're special privileges granted to a special class of gentlemen, right? So what is the term esquire? What does the bar license give you, right?
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is it would not have been the anti-lawyer amendment. It's not like people wouldn't who couldn't practice law also couldn't be in government, but you wouldn't have this foreign or corporate association organization that granted a title to a special privileged class that would basically stranglehold everything. Because, you know, if these attorneys, these bar association attorneys, if they truly do fight back against certain things, they'll be what? Disbarred. And when they're disbarred, right, what does that mean? That means that they're economically terrorized. They can't earn a living anymore in the practice of law. So the problem isn't the practice of law. The problem is the association of this incorporated body that has taken a stranglehold on all American lawyers everywhere, and that is the Bar Association. And it would have prevented that. Yes.
Well, would you agree that most lawyers are held to a higher standard? I mean, somehow they have a little bit more rights than the average American. Am I wrong?
No.
Well, yes.
I've had some interesting experiences in that. I've seen attorneys, you know, I could tell some stories.
I would call it very similarly to, how we view Freemasonry. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'm the son of a lawyer and a judge. So I've seen, there are classes of lawyers, right?
Right.
And depending upon the class or the level that you're at, yes, there are lawyers who I have seen with my own eyes, been pulled over by cops, have been let go. And these classes are called prosecutor or attorneys general, and not all of them. I'm not saying all of that. Some of them are certain types of criminal defense attorneys that handle certain cases. So, and I've seen these favors being given to them, not because of just strictly who they are, but the class that they're in. So there is kind of like a little bit of a classism there that goes on.
Fraternal order, you might say.
Yes, yes, just like the fraternal. Yes, yes, exactly. You know, and every once in a while, when we see one of these guys get prosecuted for something, I am willing to bet that somehow, some way, somebody else higher up than him was on the chopping block, and that was the sacrificial lamb. Just saying.
Or he violated his secret oaths.
Or he violated the oath, right.
Okay, one more really interesting question, because I know you guys are both Christians, right?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Esteem myself. I would aspire to be.
Right. Yes.
I think it's not a term to be taken lightly, but yes.
Trying to practice the way, yes. Yes.
Okay, so let me ask you a really interesting question. So if voting doesn't matter, if it's God's will, right, would it be fair to say that everybody, including you two with a brain, that have the ability to think rationally, if we all stayed home, all the Christians stayed home, would Donald Trump still have won the election? Isn't that an interesting question?
It is an interesting question, but your first premise started off by saying if voting doesn't matter, and I understand what you're saying, but when I hear that, I say it does matter. What it requires me to do is to acquiesce to that same 14th Amendment jurisdiction that I oppose. So therefore, I cannot, in good conscience, vote for a system that redistributes wealth to places that kill children, that do things that, and it doesn't matter under which president. I don't care what people say. It shouldn't be a federal issue. It should be a state issue anyway. But it shouldn't even be an issue, because thou shalt not murder. The de jure republic's law is based upon, if you trace it all the way back, and I'm sure Chris, you can verify this too, back through the Magna Carta to the Bible, Thou shalt not murder. It's really simple. It's not a hard concept. So I can't acquiesce to a jurisdiction that would even contemplate that as even being a thing, let alone something. I hear these Republican lawmakers, including Trump, talking like bargaining about it. Like,
right. Well, he's the deal maker.
Yeah, he's the deal maker. There is bargaining, no deal making.
Right.
Tom, bargaining about what?
Well,
bargaining
is there still funding going to Planned Parenthood?
Yeah.
You know the answer,
yeah,
to this,
I know,
right?
What
okay.
You mean.
Right.
Okay.
Now
are Saudi Arabia and so-called Israel the arguably the two worst human rights violators on the earth, even according to the corrupt UN Human Rights Council? Yes. Are we still sending them foreign aid? Do we still have billions, tens of billions of dollars worth of arms deals with Saudi Arabia, who is, you know, what about the humanitarian crisis in Yemen? These kinds of deals, deal making in Saudi Arabia and Israel and other places.
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly my point, because if I were to vote, I am thus saying, by casting that vote, one, I'm acquiescing to that jurisdiction. Two, I'm saying that I accept the outcome. Now, this is something that people don't get today. Just because you voted for Hillary and she lost, you're throwing your vote into the ring saying, okay, I'm voting, and whatever the outcome is, I accept it. That's part of the process. Mm-hmm. So I can't accept voting for the lighter of two satanic socialist baby-killing I can't do it in good conscience.
Well, can I just say something real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I saw some videos, I don't know, but maybe you guys are aware of this, but if Hillary had gotten in, do you know where we would be right now? I'm just saying.
Well,
I think God had mercy.
I think
God had mercy on our country.
I'm actually glad she asked that question. You want to answer it first, and then I'll give a my answer?
I'm going to back up, if I may, and answer the other question.
Okay, good.
And mm-hmm. my answer is, I would say, akin to yours, but I'm going to, with all due respect, and I do have respect, and so hopefully this doesn't come across wrong, but I would say it's a straw man. Would Donald Trump still have won if we all stayed home, paraphrasing or, you know, mm-hmm. boiling down the question? I would say it's a straw man. The issue really is character. And whether or not we stay home, it's an issue of character. And we see that expressed in a variety of ways. And this gets back to, again, Hayek's Road to Serfdom, the issue of socialism. The problem is, and chapter 10, for those who haven't read it, of Hayek's Road to Serfdom is titled "The Why the Worst Get on Top." And the reason the worst get on top in this sort of In a society that's trending toward totalitarianism, on the road to serfdom, hence the title, then corruption is, you know, it sort of reigns supreme. We've seen lots of articles recently in America about how sociopaths are corporate darlings now. And when that starts to happen, you see the socialists are, you know, they are frankly authoritarian in their origins. There is planning, and Hayek talks about all of this. They make plans. At some point, rubber meets road, and you have to implement plans. Well, the guy who made the plan says, you know what? I'm not willing to cross this line. Or maybe the people say, that's a little too far. But then there's another guy who comes along who says, hey, I'm willing to do that. But he'll only go so far. And the next guy comes along and says, I'll do that. And this is how the worst get on top. And it's an issue of character first and foremost. Always.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, my response.
And that's why, just to sort of conclude, you know, I was looking for Jefferson's bill for the general diffusion of knowledge, and I can't find it readily. But he talked about the character issue. A lot of these guys talked about how important, you know, make sure it's an honest person. Make sure, you know, they're an honest, not just the mobster who doesn't have a criminal record and,
right.
you know, who the neighborhood respects. No, an honest person who, you know, is a model above reproach, as the Bible would put it. It's character first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
Whether we stay home or vote, it's always character first.
So my answer to what if Donald Trump hadn't been elected, we would have had Hillary Clinton. Okay. My answer to that is this. And I am absolutely no fan at all of Hillary Clinton. I don't want this to be misunderstood. When Obama was president, we heard that the white supremacists were rising because he was black. When Trump got in, the white supremacists are rising because he's emboldening them. We are under an ideological attack in America, and what I saw under Obama was at least, and it's kind of the same thing that I saw if you look back to the Clinton years, I saw people waking up. They felt threatened, and they could see the threat. They understood that Saul Alinsky was bad. They understood that his connections with the Weather Underground was bad. They could see the Cloward-Piven strategy being implemented. They could see these things, and the most virulent men who might have the testicular fortitude to stand up and do something about it could see the danger. Donald Trump gets in, and they cannot see the danger. And that is my problem with Hillary Clinton losing, because if Hillary Clinton had gotten in, she would have continued down that pathway. We still could have seen the danger for the most part. And I think that we might have been willing to really do something about it. But instead, what we have now is we have our flavor, conservatives meaning, our flavor of socialism now, which is, this is the agenda of the communitarian or Fabian socialists. They have patience. They have that one of their logos is the turtle. Is because yeah. We move slow, but we strike hard. Right?
Obvious. Yep.
Well, yes. So
I heard that Hillary had Christians pegged for the concentration camps.
Let me answer that question real fast, and I'm going to say in my answer, I yield back. Honestly, that was a brilliant answer, Tom, and I don't think it could be answered better. I think you're absolutely right. That is the concern. I will only add, when it comes to, you know, back to George Bernard Shaw. Who was Shaw? For those who don't know, he actually answered who he was in 1901. Who am I? What I think. Read it. It's interesting. But to give folks an idea, the Rees Committee investigated big foundations. And the folks behind the big foundations, you know, that the Rees Committee investigated in the early 50s,
yep,
were actually subservient to the folks who were backing George Bernard Shaw and the Fabian Socialists. So George Bernard Shaw said these words in his Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism. He said, I also made it clear that socialism means equality of income or nothing, and that under socialism, you would not be allowed to be poor. You would be forcibly fed, clothed, lodged, taught, and employed whether you liked it or not. There's more, but that's what he called being permitted to live well.
Yes.
Okay, well, real quick, you guys. Believe.
Well, we just ran out of time, dear. I'm so sorry.
Okay, real quick, but you guys need to come up to a solution for this problem.
Education and testicular fortitude.
Well said.
All right, God bless you guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Chris, for joining us tonight. Chris Hinckley, the Road Warrior, and myself, Tom Lacovara-Stewart, Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Media, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you tonight.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.